with us, as we are here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. We're going to have an interesting show today. We're going to be talk about legislation and retirement. And we've got, for the first part of the show, we have two people who are normally behind-the-scenes actors, but they're going to be with us today. Julia Ziegler is the operations and web manager, and she's going to be talking about the retirement tsunami. Is it upon us or not? And Jolie Lee, who is still running the boards even as we speak, is going to be working by remote and talk to us about the new thrift savings plan survey and some other things. So, Jolie, welcome. Welcome to the club.
Thank you.
Welcome to this side of the microphone. We've been talking about the retirement tsunami since 1999. That's when the first things were written about it. And everybody was doing the numbers, and they said, look, the government workforce is X old. X number of people will be able to retire in a year, X number in 2, 3, 4, 5. And the assumption was that they'd do it. But it didn't happen that way for reasons we don't quite understand. Retirements have been lower than usual for the last decade, really, and it may have something to do with the economy, may have a lot to do with the economy. But the point is that last year, the retirement applications jumped 24%.
Mm-hmm.
I think over 104,000 people put in their papers. And as some people say, this is the start of something big.
It is. And, you know, what really got us starting even to think about this story and writing this story in the first place was we saw a lot of high-level feds retiring. Tom Trabuco, who's been on this show countless number of times from the TSP, Pat Howard, the CISO, former CISO now, from NRC. And we started to say to ourselves, you know, if these people are retiring, you know, how many other people are retiring as well? Combine, you know, this kind of anecdotal evidence with the stats that we're seeing from OPM as well. And that really got us thinking, maybe this is starting. Maybe this is something that isn't going to be just a rumor or, you know, a myth anymore.
Well, you know, you got to ask. I mean, everybody knew that at some point these people would either retire or die at their
right.
desks.
Right.
There's only two ways out. But do you have any feel as to why it's happening now?
You know, I think that there are some different reasons. I think we talked with some, you know, with some experts, some people who look at this kind of stuff every day. We talked to John Palguto from the Partnership for Public Service. We talked to John Desenberg from the Performance Institute. We talked to Carol Bonacero from SEA. We talked to Michael Caine, the Chief Human Capital Officer from Energy. And, you know, they gave us some different reasons. You know, like we already talked about, people are getting older. Those baby boomers are getting to retirement age. So maybe it is just a fact of fact of life. People get old and eventually they retire. But then we have all these issues that are going on Capitol Hill. And people say that they, you know, when they talk to feds, some feds are just fed up. They're fed up with the way that they're treated by Congress, by the public at large. You know, they think that they're being targeted in some respects unfairly. And so, you know, we started seeing, I think especially last year, a ton of different legislation come through Congress that would affect feds. You know, an extension of the already 2-year pay freeze. We've got the you've written about it a lot, the whole idea of moving you know, from the high 3 to the high 5 to calculate your pensions. There's a whole bunch of legislation out there that people are worried about. Another thing that Carol Bonacero has talked about on our air is the Stock Act. And she says that, you know, some high-level feds that the Stock Act will affect, that feds are really upset about that. And they don't necessarily they're a little bit worried about this website that's going to show, you know, some of
their financial
information.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. And so all of these things combined, when you start to combine all these things, I think you can kind of start to see a picture of why some feds just might say, you know what, I'm done. I don't need to deal with this. I don't want to deal with it. I've dealt with it for however many years, and now, it's time to go.
Tammy Flanagan, who's a household word in the federal community, you know, she invented the best day to retire. She's a regular on the four-year benefit show, which is on this station every Monday. Tammy teaches pre-retirement seminars literally all over the mm-hmm. world. And she has an interesting prop that she takes with her, and it's a two-page letter. And it's from the Air Force, and it's warning people the high three is going to be changed to the high five. You're going to have to pay more for your contributions. Mm-hmm. Yada yada yada. The list of the usual suspects, as Claude Rains said in Casablanca. The interesting thing is, if you look at it closely, you can see it was typed on a typewriter, and that's because it's something like 20 years old.
Right.
And people were getting these warnings 20 years ago and worrying about them. But now it seems like, and the headline on my federal report today was, this is not a drill, or yesterday,
right.
This is not a drill. It seems to really be happening. We spent all of last year doing this, doing these cliffhangers, the Simpson-Bowles Commission, mm-hmm. the Biden Commission, congressional panels, bipartisan. Nothing happened, but from that Simpson-Bowles Commission, a number of ideas have remained. They're sort of like the five commandments, if you will, and the first one of them is this higher contribution rate that you're discussing. So maybe, as you say, we're all getting older, but maybe people have they said, this is it. I can't take any more, or I think it's going to happen. Now, of course, if this change happened, if they introduced a high three to the high five, if they eliminated the FERS Social Security supplement, if mm-hmm. they made people pay more for their benefits, possibly a lot of people would bail out before the effective date, which we assume, don't know, would be January 1 of 2012.
I think the other interesting thing as well, going back to what you just said, is that these ideas are coming from both parties. And maybe that's a little bit different than some things in the past. You know, the pay freeze that feds are currently under was a President Obama proposal, a Democratic proposal. You know, of course, President Obama is now proposing a 0.5% increase for feds in 2013, and some other legislation on the Hill we're seeing is calling for a continuation of the pay freeze. But I think that shows this kind of there is some bipartisan-ness behind some of these bills. Not all.
Yeah.
Not all, by far. There are some bills that are strictly Republican bills that would affect feds, and some that are Democratic bills. But I think that feds see that. Maybe where before they would say, that's just coming from one side of the Hill, or, you know, from one party, it won't necessarily, you know, it can't pass, it won't pass, you know, we don't have to worry about it. I think that seeing that that bipartisanship perhaps is something that maybe worries them a little bit more and gets them to thinking that, yeah, this really could happen this time.
You know, I've been doing this for many, many years, and I've heard since day one, almost on the beat, that Democrats think that federal workers are Democrats, and Republicans think that federal workers are Democrats.
Right.
So enough of this goes on, and after a while, you think, well, one group might say, well, we've got nothing to gain by being nice to these people, so we won't be, and we'll go with our principles. The other group says, we've got them. They're mm-hmm. locked in, and kind of taking them for granted. And I think that's a good point, that the two-year pay freeze, it could have been three, but mm-hmm. the two-year pay freeze was proposed by President Obama, and the unions sort of grinned and bore it, if you will. I often wonder if President Bush had been in power, or President McCain had been in power and proposed a two-year pay freeze, if the Democrats in Congress would have let it happen. We'll mm-hmm. never know, but I wonder.
I think the other thing, you know, you said this, I think it was in your column today, that both parties have also proposed increases to pension contributions.
Yeah.
That's another one where it's not just the Republicans proposing something. It's both Democrats and Republicans. So, again, like your column says, it's not a matter of, you know, if it's going to happen, but how much, perhaps.
Yeah.
Because it seems like if they both agree that this is something that should be raised, then it's probably going to happen. It's just a matter of what the percentage will be.
We need to take a short break here. We'll come back, because that's an excellent point. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio.
leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For military service members and veterans, there's no better place to go for your life insurance needs than AFMA. Our level term to age 50 policy is only $19 per month for $400,000 of coverage. And every member's policy comes with AFMA's unique survivor assistance services. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files in all these different formats, then 20 years later somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Disabled American Veterans is dedicated to one single purpose, building better lives for America's disabled veterans. May 18th through the 20th, in the company of the vintage B-25 Mitchell Bomber, DAV brings its message of support for veterans to the Joint Base Andrews Air Show. In its modern-day mission with DAV, the B-25 serves as a reminder of the sacrifices veterans make for freedom. Meet the DAV flight team with the B-25 at the Joint Base Andrews Air Show.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for May is the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure. Save lives in Arlington. Save lives in Rockville. Save lives in Georgetown. One goal, save lives of women fighting breast cancer in Washington and beyond. Join the mission to save lives and join the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure on June 2nd. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Julia Ziegler. She's our web operations manager here. It's good to have somebody with an overview in to look at these things. And coming up, we'll be talking with Jolie Lee. She is a digital news writer, and she's also running the boards today and producing the show. Julia, before we left, you made a good point about the fact that it's not a question of is something going to happen with the retirement. It's what's going to happen. And the administration has proposed a 1.5% or 1.2% increase.
1.2 over 3 years.
3 years. And the House is looking at a 5% increase phased in. And so it's probably not a question of is it going to happen, but where will it come in that 1.2 to 5% range? Will they compromise on 3% like they do in Pawn Stars, you know?
Right. I mean, that's the thing, right? It seems like at least they're on the same page with this one.
Yeah.
They don't have to actually, it's not like they're polar opposites on this issue right now. They both agree that a raise would be is something that they want to
do,
but
it's going to happen.
It's a matter of how much.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the question also becomes how much can Congress get done before the election season really kicks in, and you know. So that's another issue.
This may be a priority item, though, because, you know, with the Secret Service and GSA, this is the perfect time for both parties to beat feds. You know, this is just coming good. Yeah, I know you're fascinated with the, with retirement. What comes next? Mm-hmm. What happens after? If this tsunami hits, and even if it doesn't, 100,000 people a year retiring is quite a goodly number of people. I'm thinking if you have a college student son or daughter mm-hmm. with a master's degree who's living in your basement because they can't get a job.
Right.
You made the point this morning, we were talking about it, that this may open up a lot of jobs.
I think it does. I think, though, the question is, you know, when you ask agencies or you ask some of these retirement experts about where the next crop of federal workers is going to come from. You know, they say that the federal government doesn't have a recruiting problem. They say that, you know, they've had the same amount of recruiting dollars since the 90s when they were cut, that they're doing just fine. They're finding the right kinds of people. But I would question whether or not the recruiting is enough. And that's something that we're actually going to look into next, is what is the recruiting like for these federal agencies. You know, I was telling you this morning, I'm the kind of person, I like to help people, you know, that's just kind of my deposition, that I would be perfect for
federal service. But in your small town in Pennsylvania, it never occurred to you.
My small town in Pennsylvania never occurred to me. No one ever came to my high school. I went to Penn State. I never heard of some federal agencies coming to recruit there. I'm sure that they did, but I just never heard about it. So I think it's also an issue of how much, you know, where are these agencies recruiting, and are they actually able to recruit the folks that they need for this next generation of workers?
They may have enough bodies, but do they have the right bodies?
Right.
Let me switch over to Jolie Lee here. She's a digital writer, and Jolie is usually behind the microphone, behind the cameras. But you did a piece the other day that, and, you know, woe is me, that federal workers like the Thrift Savings Plan. And that's kind of an eye-opener, because most of the people we hear from do not like the TSP because they think it doesn't give them enough flexibility. It doesn't let them make day trades and that sort of thing. But this survey is just the exact opposite.
Right. So this survey was done by the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, and they talked to more than 8,200 people and found 86% of feds are actually satisfied with the TSP. They like it for its flexibility, and what could be a reason for its positive response is the revamped website and automatic enrollment for new feds, which started last summer.
Well, not to be suspicious, but did the board do this survey itself, or did they contract it out?
They worked with a group called Aon Hewitt.
Okay.
I also wonder if how much, you know, the availability of the Roth TSP now actually made a difference in that. You know, I know that's something that people were really excited about. So I wonder if that, you know, that made the results more positive as well, which is a good thing. But I just wonder if that played into it.
Well, you know, the postal unions early on in the Thrift Savings Plan really bought into it and educated their people. And the Postal Service, although it's relatively low paying as federal agencies go, has a very high percentage of people. The Navy among the military has a very high percentage. And if you look at these agencies that have the most professionals and the most high paid people, they have the highest participation rate. So somebody out there likes this program, and the people who are not taking advantage of it, as Greg Long, the executive director, said, are leaving money on the table.
And the people who aren't contributing to TSP, they say, you know, they just don't think they have enough money to contribute right now, or they suspended contributions due to hardship withdrawal. And then about 20% said they don't receive the matching contribution.
20%, that's amazing, and it's too bad. I mean, they may have very good reasons for not putting that in, but if they would put in 5%, they'd get a 5% match. That's, again, it's a 5% tax-deferred pay raise.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, what did people not like about it?
Generally, the feds who made $25,000 or less, or the lower paid feds, just said they couldn't afford to.
Sure.
It wasn't so much a criticism of TSP, but they just didn't have the extra money. And of the people who do contribute but not to the full 5% match, about a fifth said they didn't know their agency provided a matching amount.
That's always interesting. You know, we drill this stuff into people's heads, but if you don't know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I once went around to our office and asked people what funds they were in our 401k, and most didn't know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I had some very good help from someone when I first started here, mm-hmm. and I'm so glad that, you know, I've never been a money person.
Yeah.
But I got some very good advice from someone who, you know, does know the financial world, and I was able to invest pretty well in our 401k here. So thank goodness I did it.
Well, you know, several years ago, Francis Rose and I had mm-hmm. John Bogle, the founder of Vanguard and the father of the index fund, on, and he was talking about the TSP, and he said he wished he could get in it.
Me too.
You know, and Alan Roth of CBS Money Watch has said several times he's looking for a way to get into
That's
it.
Right.
So it really is a good deal. We get no commission out of this,
That's
and
right.
we only wish we could get in it. But Jolie, so 8,200 respondents, that's a lot of people when you consider the average survey, like who are you going to vote for president, is 1,000 or less.
Right. So I think they got about a 15% response rate on the survey.
I would think that's very high, too. And as you said here, I'm looking at your story in front of me now, those who didn't contribute, 18% didn't know they had matching contributions. That's amazing.
Yeah, and the survey made a recommendation that the TSP board should continue to educate participants on the benefits of investing, so including using social media and maybe developing some mobile apps to reach those younger feds.
You know, it's something, too. I think a lot of people say the government should do more to educate them about mm-hmm. this. But coming from the private sector and from other companies, I know that in the private sector, they are loath to advise you, not because they are cheap, there's a fiduciary responsibility there, and they don't want you to say you got the advice from them and lost your shirt. And it seems to me the government goes way out on a limb with these things. It doesn't tell you how to invest, but I mean, it gives you so much information.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think there's a difference, right, between giving someone financial advice and telling them what funds to put their money in and telling them that, you know, this is available, this is how you join, this is how you can check your funds or where you can check your funds on a daily basis. You know, your agency matches these funds, all of those kinds of things that I think are very beneficial. And I don't know how it happens, you know, when they onboard people. Is it a part of the onboarding process? Do they say, you know, you as a federal employee have the right to be in the, you know, you're in the TSP, right? You're automatically rolled or whatnot, and this is how much, or this is, you know, where your money's going, and you have the right to change what funds you're in. I just wonder what part of the process you're told about that.
I don't know. And I don't check the website all that often, but I'm learning every day to refer people to it. Mm-hmm. Julie, we wanted not to put you on the spot, but this rollout for the Roth was supposed to start, I guess, next week, May 7th. But some agencies, and I've read it on our website, some major agencies say, not for us. Do you know what the status of that is? Okay. All right. We don't know. I think Defense for One.
I think the story on our website that we did, I believe it said some agencies in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be until the summer that some of these federal military agencies will be able to join the Roth. And for some, not till the fall. And that's just a matter of getting the systems all updated and making sure that they can do these things. So while most agencies, it seems like, will be ready for the May 7th launch, I believe is the date, some will have to wait. So you'll have to check with your agency to see if your agency is one of them that is or is not.
And I don't want to guess the others. I know it was Defense, but it seems to me it was a very large agency or two.
Yeah, and it looks like there's a story on our website by Gillian Brockel, and Veterans Affairs will start rolling theirs out in July.
So that's huge.
Marine Corps in June.
Okay. Yeah, that's big. So you may have most agencies doing it, but you may have most employees for a while not being in it,
right,
because they're in these, VA and the defense, the biggest ones. Hey, thank you, Julia. Thank you, Jolie, for being here. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk with the Federal Timesman about some pending legislation.
Journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Reusing government personal property can save taxpayers millions of dollars. It's also a requirement that federal agencies acquire excess personal property first before purchasing new items. If you're wondering how to acquire excess personal property or transfer your agency's excess personal property, turn to GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. GSA offers programs and online tools such as GSA Excess to help reuse and recycle items ranging from office equipment and furniture to computers, scientific devices, heavy machinery, airplanes, boats, and much more. Let GSA help you get the most out of the government's resources while saving money and protecting the environment. Remember, when you no longer need it, someone else does. For more information on reusing and recycling your excess personal property, visit GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. gsa.gov/reusecmp. That's gsa.gov/reusecmp.
I have this dream where I'm wading through a crowd. Now and then, someone stops and offers me a new job. And it seems like the opportunities are endless. Soon I'm doing the work I've always wanted to do, designing smarter energy systems that transform communities, save millions of dollars, and... Wait, that's no dream. That actually happened. After I got my master's degree in electrical engineering from Capital College.
Capital's master's program in electrical engineering prepares you for some of today's most in-demand jobs. It's conducted online with live streaming audio, so you get the interactivity of a classroom without having to fight traffic to get there. And Capital is one of only 8 colleges and universities nationwide endorsed by IEEE as a provider of a quality engineering education.
I'm living out my dream because of Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For a virtual info session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Fly a kite and you get a good feel for how much force can be created by a lightweight aircraft. That's the idea behind a new system for getting power from wind. Winds are generally stronger and more consistent further from the ground. So Makani Power is launching propeller-controlled aircraft to tap that energy. Mechanical engineer Corwin Hardam is their CEO.
The thing that is different with our aircraft is ours is tied to the ground with a flexible tether. And that energy gets piped down the tether to the ground.
And one day, to the grid. It's a computer-guided kite engineered to fly itself in a nearly circular path.
Because that's one of the most effective paths for generating energy.
Hardam says the system is about 90% lighter than conventional wind turbines and can be more easily installed in a wider range of locations.
We expect to be cost competitive with the cheapest of the fossil fuel energy sources.
For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. We're glad to have you with us. And I would remind you, we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And we're also archived on our homepage. So if you want to hear this show or a previous show, you can do it at the time of your choosing. And thanks to Julia Ziegler and Jolie Lee for the first half of the show. Now we're going to move on with Stephen Losey and Sean Riley. They're both senior writers with Federal Times. Gents, are you there?
We're here.
In your magnificent studio at the Federal Times?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Hey, listen, Steve, I want to ask you first. We were talking about this proposal to increase the retirement contributions by 5%. Where is that now, and how serious is it?
Well, it's it hasn't been introduced yet. This is just something that's rattling around in Senator Daniel Akaka's head. He has drafted a bill, but it has not been introduced yet. Basically, this would – he calls this auto-escalation – it would automatically increase the amount that new federal employees pay into the TSP if they are automatically enrolled. See, a couple of years ago, TSP started automatically enrolling new feds into the G fund at a 3% rate. And the idea was you want to get people saving as soon as possible, early on in their career, so they can have a nice nest egg when they retire. But there are a lot of younger people who aren't thinking about that, and they wanted to kind of give them a nudge to start them saving. Now, they gave them an opportunity to opt out, of course, if they really don't want to. But most of the people who are automatically enrolled are staying in the TSP plan, or they're changing, they're adding more savings, making their own choices. Now, Daniel Akaka wants to take it one step further. He wants to hike the 3% contribution that automatically enrolled people have by 1% each year for at least 3 years, which would leave people saving up to, 6% or more.
But again, not mandatory.
Not mandatory. You do have the option to opt out, but you have to choose to.
Right. Okay. And I guess the thinking behind it, too, because Akaka is a friend of federal workers, and there are a lot of feds in Hawaii. The thinking is the sooner you get started, the better, as you said. But also, if you start out with an automatic, say, 3% contribution, you really will never miss it. It comes out of your first paycheck, and it's not all of the horrible deductions from a government paycheck. That's just another one of them.
That's true. And one thing that this automatically bumping people's pay contributions up does do, it brings them pretty quickly to the 5% contribution rate that is what you need to be contributing to get the maximum matching contribution.
That's the money shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you're previously on the show, you were talking about the survey that found a surprising amount of people don't realize that they get matching contributions, and this would kind of again, nudge them towards that.
Yeah, it is. There's probably 20% of any group that doesn't know what their benefits package contains. And we were talking earlier, and I'd like to get your take on it, on this this bill. I guess it's the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee that has voted to increase employee pension contributions by 5%.
Yeah, that is something that the committee voted on last week. This is something that was required as part of the Paul Ryan budget. They had to raise $79 billion over 10 years. They found $82 billion by this 5%, essentially a 5% pay cut. Basically, it would phase in over 5 years a steep increases to the amount that federal employees contribute to their pension plans. It would leave FERS employees, who are now contributing 0.8%, it would leave them paying 5.8%. CSRS employees, their contributions would go from 7% to 12%. It would also eliminate the FERS Social Security supplement for new federal employees who are hired after December 31st.
Now, and that would not have an impact. The pension contribution would increase, but would the Social Security supplement, would that continue for people who would be grandfathered in?
Basically, anybody who is already employed or who is hired hired up until December 31st of this year, as well as, I believe, people who newly hired employees who had at least five years of previous experience would also be grandfathered.
So
in.
That's not a reason to quit or retire from your government job if you're in right now.
No. It's worth noting that a previous version of this bill was much tougher on the FERS supplement. The previous version would make it so people who retire after December, after
I recall
December,
that, yeah,
would lose their first supplement. They've pulled back on that slightly.
Yeah, so that may be all the compromising they're willing to get. Now, you made the point a couple of weeks ago. Julia Ziegler reiterated it just a while ago. We were talking about this. This is one of those things that it's you can kind of take it out of the realm of will it happen or not. It's just a question. It's more a question of what form it will happen in. Is that right?
Yeah. Now, what was passed last week has very little chance of itself making it into law, because it has to go through the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats. House Democrats like Jerry Connolly were saying, you know, this is going to die, and Jerry Connolly called it a deserved death in the Senate. So this specific bill probably doesn't have much of a chance of passing. However, we have seen proposals like this get floated in Congress in the past, die, and then come back later, you know, kind of resurrect like a zombie, as part of a bill that Democrats can't refuse. We saw it a couple months ago with the payroll tax cut extension that ended up hiking new federal employees' pension contributions as well. You know, and I was talking to Steny Hoyer last week, and I asked him if he thinks it'll come back, even if this proposal does die today or soon. Will it come back in the future? And Steny Hoyer said, yes, there's a good chance it could come back.
Well, and also the administration has itself proposed an increase, hasn't it?
That's right. President Obama has proposed a 1.2 percentage point increase to pension contributions, which by the fact that he's proposed it, that's now the floor. So the message I would have for federal employees is, your contributions are most likely going to increase at least 1.2%.
Yeah. Okay. And if they haggle, it could be something like 3, couldn't it?
It could be. Yeah.
I'm always interested in where they come up with these numbers and these figures. The administration says 1.2% will do it. The Ryan budget says it's got to be 5%. What is their justification?
Well, the House Republicans say that defined benefit plans, pension plans, such as CSRS, they say that they are kind of an outdated way of paying for people's retirement. They say they're too expensive. They say that the nation with the deficit we're facing can't afford them, and they say that they're kind of falling out of favor in the private sector. And that is correct. A lot of private sector companies have either drastically scaled back or cut their defined benefit pension entirely. And one thing that they keep that Republicans and some observers keep pointing to is the fact that for FERS, for example, federal employees contribute about 1/14 of the cost. The bulk of the pension, the bulk of the payment for the pension in FERS comes from the federal government. When there was the Simpson-Bowles Commission back in 2010, they said that FERS employees should split the cost, and this 5% increase wouldn't quite get to FERS to splitting the cost between federal employees and the government, but it gets close. So I think that's what's on their mind, is equalizing the contribution rates between federal employees and government and the government.
Well, you know, federal workers, of course, they're not accustomed to the private sector, what the deal is. But the Employee Benefit Research Institute has said that fewer than half of Americans have any kind of retirement plan now. If they do, oftentimes it doesn't include health insurance, and it does not have anything like a COLA. So once you retire, that's your pension for life. If federal workers counter and say, well, the good retirement program is a counterbalance for being paid less, and so both sides kind of make the same argument, but in reverse. But I have seen studies that show that people on Social Security and on civil service in particular, depending on how long they worked and their income, tend to get their everything they put in, their get their contributions back in 18 months to 3 years, which is, you know, pretty quick turnaround. We need to take a short break here, but we'll come back. We're talking with Sean Riley and Stephen Losey of the Federal Times.
Kaiser Permanente, we carefully select our doctors so you can carefully select your doctors. Our hiring process is so selective, only 1 in 10 doctors who apply make the cut. Yes, we're uber picky. Probably have a little perfectionism complex in there, but by putting our doctors under the microscope, we've discovered some of the greatest medical minds in their fields, and that's led to an even greater medical breakthrough. Drumroll, please. Award-winning care. We've received many of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, overall quality of care, and more. But we're not the only ones reaping the rewards. Because we carefully select our doctors, you have great doctors to choose from. And with all those great doctors, you think it'd be easy. But try choosing just one for your primary care doctor. We'll let you create your own highly selective process for that. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you thrive. Visit us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Mark Herman from Booz Allen Hamilton commented during the panel discussion titled The Cloud as a Shroud, Fraud in a Digital Age, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
The commodity availability of scalable storage and processing nodes, basically on demand, has made it economically feasible to expand the scope of data evaluated in real time or in near real time. And these are allows you to make timely and actionable conclusions.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Information is flowing from more sources than ever before. Cloud-enabled enterprises can collect and analyze terabytes of data by leveraging the new technology. They can rapidly analyze an entire data set, developing deeper insights than what could be gained from looking at only a portion of the data, thus enabling better decisions made much faster. Booz Allen Hamilton believes secure, scalable, and automated cloud-based solutions can help derive actionable information faster. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Fly a kite and you get a good feel for how much force can be created by a lightweight aircraft. That's the idea behind a new system for getting power from wind. Winds are generally stronger and more consistent further from the ground. So Makani Power is launching propeller-controlled aircraft to tap that energy. Mechanical engineer Corwin Hardam is their CEO.
The thing that is different with our aircraft is ours is tied to the ground with a flexible tether. And that energy gets piped down the tether to the ground.
And one day, to the grid. It's a computer-guided kite engineered to fly itself in a nearly circular path.
Because that's one of the most effective paths for generating energy.
Hardam says the system is about 90% lighter than conventional wind turbines and can be more easily installed in a wider range of locations.
We expect to be cost competitive with the cheapest of the fossil fuel energy sources.
For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
As IT becomes more ingrained in agency missions, the acquisition process will need to become more responsive in meeting the needs of the technology workforce, especially since ongoing trends suggest 2012 will be a watershed year for reform. Join AFSEA Bethesda on May 24th at the Bethesda North Marriott as chief acquisition officers and senior procurement executives discuss how agencies and industry can work together to improve technology acquisition. Register today at afseabethesda.org/maybreakfast.
This is Mark Amtower. For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Stephen Losey and Sean Ryder, the senior writers for the Federal Times. And Steve brought us up to speed on this 5% contribution hike, both the good one from Senator Akaka, which would increase the contributions of employees to get them a head start in the thrift savings plan, and then the not so good one that would increase retirement contributions by 5%. And Steve thinks that has a very good chance of being enacted into law. Sean, I know you've been tracking the Postal Service, and I have a feeling that when you retire, when you write your last story for the Federal Times, which is probably 20 or 30 years down the road, you will be writing about postal reform.
Well, hopefully they'll have done something before then, but it's interesting. The Postmaster General, Patrick Donahue, was on C-SPAN Newsmakers program this weekend saying that he'd like to see Congress pass a final bill by the end of this month. And I think the one thing that most people can feel fairly confident of is that is not going to happen.
That's not going to happen, and you don't care which month it is.
Yeah, right? Well, he didn't say which year.
Yes, right. Well, I mean, the scope of it, you know, we jest and everything, but this is your second largest federal agency. It's nationwide. It touches virtually everybody in the country to some extent. Everybody wants it to be streamlined. They want the rates to be cut, and most people are using now email and other things to bypass it. And yet they want economy, but they want their local post office to remain open.
Yeah, exactly. And that certainly goes true for their members of Congress. Since we spoke last week, the Senate did pass its version of postal reform legislation that has some things that Mr. Donahue and other leaders of the Postal Service really like. It would let the Postal Service tap into billions of dollars in excess contributions to the Federal Employees Retirement System. It would give the Postal Service a big break, essentially, by stretching out the payment schedule for this retiree health care fund that they're supposed to, you know, or health care fund for future retiree health benefits that's, at this point is costing them about $5.5 billion a year. This would stretch out the payment schedule and reduce those annual payments. But there's a lot of stuff the Postal Service doesn't like in it, and among most and a lot of those provisions would essentially delay the Postal Service's attempts to cut costs. It would, you know, require them to wait at least two more years before they end most Saturday delivery. It would prohibit them from closing any rural post office for a year and make it more general to close post offices in general, you know, overall. And right after the bill passed, you know, the Postal Service Board of Governors put out a very strongly worded statement saying that they were disappointed in the bill, that it would not, essentially saying that it would not let the Postal Service become financially viable. And, against the backdrop for this is that back in December, the Postal Service put a freeze on its own on closings of any post offices or mail processing plants until May 15th. Well, we're less than 2 weeks away from when that deadline expires, and the question now is what's the Postal Service going to do? On Monday, the four Senate sponsors of that Senate legislation, Senators Lieberman, Collins, Carper, and Brown, sent a letter to Donahue asking him to essentially keep that freeze in place until Congress, you know, does pass a final bill. And that could be some months away if it happens at all. And so now the question is how the Postal Service is going to respond to that. They haven't said officially. There's a lot of speculation that they they'll still go ahead with some token cuts, but not anything significant, at least in the next few months.
Well, you know, the Postal Service over the years, not under this Postmaster General, but over the years has irritated and shocked Congress from time to time and the employees as well, when it was revealed that they were paying the health insurance premium of executives. Mm-hmm. That was a shocker and a sort of a Wall Street bit of arrogance at its worst. And then the Postal Service salaries for some of the top executives. Hasn't there been a move to go after those?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. There is a provision that was added by Senator John Tester, Democrat of Montana, that would essentially cut the top salaries for Postal Service executives to no more than what a cabinet secretary makes, which is now around $200,000. Mr. Donahue, I think, last year made, and this is just base compensation, about $271,000. So by, depending on how you count it, it would represent about a one-third pay cut.
He could take Hillary Clinton to dinner every night.
That's it. it's, you know, Senator Tester's up for re-election. I think he's kind of been using the Postal Service as a bit of a punching bag. So the question of whether this, you know, how seriously he intends to do this. The Postal Service argument is that, this is an organization that employs more than half a million people, you know, has revenues of, you know, more than, I think, $65 billion. And that if this were a real private sector company, Mr. Donahue would be making a heck of a lot more than he is, and that they need these salary premiums to attract good people and talented people and get them to stay.
And they've also made the argument, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the heads of postal services, I believe in Germany and possibly Great Britain, maybe even Canada, make a lot more money than they do.
That's interesting. I had not heard that. If it's true, I mean, it bolsters the case for, you know, paying postal executives more than they would normally make if they were in the regular federal civil service.
Yeah, I think Deutsche Post, if that's the way to pronounce it, it pays its people significantly better. But there's an argument about that. But the postal service, it seems to me, is really between a rock and a hard place. It's technologically, you have email and texting, and nobody's there. The mail volume is down, first class is down, the people side of the mail is down. People don't send out birthday invitations anymore, you get it on email. And yet the Postal Service is charged by law with providing service and with taking, you know, and I would use the example of, you know, Sarasota, Florida to Nome, Alaska, taking that letter for 44 or 45 cents, whatever it is, which FedEx and UPS would not do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think you're exactly, you know, your description's absolutely accurate. And there's, the Postal Service Inspector General this week released a report that was basically based on focus groups with members of the commercial mailing industry, asking them whether they saw any chance of stopping this slide in the use of first-class mail, which, of course, is the Postal Service's big moneymaker. And the answer was no, that maybe Postal Service may be able to do some things to slow it down, slow down the rate of decline, but it's not going to stop. So, and here you've got a business model that has been completely upended by the Internet and other forms of technology that you just listed. And there's really there's a lot of pressure on the Postal Service to from organized labor and members of Congress to come up with ways, you know, to be innovative, to come up with ways to grow the business. You know, but it's a lot easier to say that than actually carry it out.
Well, for years, in this business, the newspaper business, the radio and whatnot, you live for the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And the reader mail and listener mail and comments and people leaking things, it was wonderful. And you just, the more mail you got, the better. And the other day here at the office, I checked my mailbox and there was a letter in it. I don't know how long it had been since I had checked it. And I was actually a little bit afraid of it. I was reluctant to open it, you know, as if it had anthrax or something. And I figured this has got to be from a strange person, but turns out it was nice, but there's no return for this.
Mm-mm, no, I mean, and the Postal Service certainly is not counting on that. I mean, they see their future, at least in terms of what the kinds of products and services they can now offer, as being in parcels and junk mail. And I think every time I open my mailbox on the way home in the afternoon or evening, the amount of the volume of mail, junk mail essentially confirms that that's where things are headed.
Yeah, well, that is interesting you say that, and I've certainly noticed that too, invites to things. And I know one time I was talking to somebody, that's third class mail, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to somebody in the third class mailers organization, very powerful lobby and very well funded, and he said, you can call it junk if you want, but we're not stupid. We wouldn't send it out if people didn't use it and need it. So for everybody like you or me that throws away that pizza coupon, there are people who welcome it.
Yeah, that's the Postal Service's pitch, essentially, to the mailing industry and to businesses, is that people, you know, unlike what you get over the Internet, or you know that comes in through email, often spam, that people actually do, you know, they do look at this, they do consider it, and it is a very effective medium, as the Postal Service described it, for reaching potential
Great.
Customers.
I think we're going to be talking about postal reform for a long, long time. Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Sean. And we'll, thank you, folks, for being with us. Remember, we're archived. You can listen anytime. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.